This is Close Your Eyes, Catch the Tide, written by There Must Be a Lock, and read by Flower Parish. This is a Marvel and DC crossover fic, rated for teen and up audiences, featuring the relationship Roy Harper / Jason Todd. This is part of the larger A Muscle the Size of Your Fist series, and part one of the Outlaws-centric Punk AU. For a moment, Jason's not sure he can do this. They have a hell of a lot to prove, and a shitty set time to do it in. 2:45 on the second smallest stage. Jason knew it'd be like that. It's not like they have an album yet, just a handful of demos on MySpace, a shitload of connections, and a certain notoriety. They haven't even played a show, not a real one. But it's one thing to know they've got an uphill battle ahead of them, and another thing entirely to be faced with the reality of a small, disinterested midday crowd. But then his legs carry him out onto the stage, and he squares up to the mic like it wants to punch him, and Roy's counting them in, and of course he can do this. He was born to do this. To grab a crowd around the throat and shake them until they listen. To scream until they can't ignore him anymore. The Birds and the Bat blew up so fast, they never played dives or midday festival sets, never opened for tiny bands, never had to sing to an empty room. And in the last year or so, it felt like half the massive audience was just standing around, waiting for them to play their two hits. Like they'd only showed up because they'd seen Jason and Dick on the cover of a magazine. Jason almost forgot how much he loves this, the fight to win people over, to earn their respect. This is what he did, after all, before Bruce found him. People called him Bruce's protege, as if Bruce taught him everything he knows, but the truth is that Jason taught himself. He used to busk, used to spend every goddamn day out on the street making people stop and pay attention, and he was good at it. And that was back when it was just him and his acoustic. No Roy bashing the hell out of his cymbals like they're Ollie's face, and no Corey thrashing her orange hair around with every brutally fast bass line, just Jason. Now that he's got the two of them, shit, the crowd doesn't stand a fucking chance. From the first time they played together, he knew they could be something special. The Outlaws came together like they were meant to be. Jason was at the tail end of the mother of all benders, in the blurry lost days after Bruce kicked him out of the Birds and the Bat, when he ran into Corey. She saved his dumbass from getting arrested, again, at a dive in West Hollywood, and invited him to crash in her pool house for a while. A week later, Roy called and asked if Jason could put his fuckwad of a brother on the line. Unlike the rest of the world, Roy hadn't heard what happened, because he was in rehab, but he needed a ride out of rehab, and Dick wasn't answering his calls. The rest, as they say, is history. They're really goddamn good together, but Jason wasn't sure anybody would care how good they are. He knows how public opinion works. Most of these people wrote them off before they even showed up. One former pop princess, one trust fund kid fresh out of his fourth stint in rehab, and Jason, an angry, spoiled has-been, a loose cannon with a chip on his shoulder. But somehow, they're winning people over. He can see the moment it dawns on the crowd that they're good, that this isn't just a few fuck-ups, that they're here to be heard, and that they've got something to say. He can see the way the waves and eddies of the sea of humanity start to crash and roil like a storm is kicking up some almighty winds. When it's over, Jason feels like he's just getting started. He stands there for a moment, just drinking it in, and then he shouts, "See you motherfuckers tomorrow!" Corey is beaming, her real smile, not the one she wears for the press. So is Roy, wide and white in his tomato-red face. He took off his shirt at some point, and his entire freckled torso is glistening with sweat, flushed from the sun and exertion. He shakes his long hair like a dog, sending sweat flying. Jason hasn't seen Roy smile like that in a long goddamn time. He almost forgot how bright Roy's smile can be. Jason's an antisocial motherfucker, now more than ever. They don't have to worry about running into the birds and the bat yet. Dick and company will only be joining Warped Tour for July, headlining that month before they start their arena tour with goddamn Green Day. But even so, the Outlaws make a point of keeping to themselves at first. Jason can feel people watching them, judging them, every time they open the van door. Walking to the stage through the maze of buses every day feels like being marched to the gallows. Dramatic? Maybe. But hey, it's part of his appeal. Or so Rolling Stone once said. Last time he played Warped Tour, it felt like summer camp. They had the second-to-last set of the night, two air-conditioned buses to themselves, and the envy of every other band on tour, with the way they'd skyrocketed to fame. It was like Jason and Dick against the world for a while. The flip side of that was the press and the pressure. So many goddamn interviews. MTV, Fuse, Alt Press, Spin, even that one goddamn teen fashion magazine asking Jason what he looked for in a girlfriend. The answer he gave, complete with camera-ready smile, was honesty. Ironically enough, that was a lie. A penis would have been the honest answer. Jason wasn't a very good liar, and he sure as fuck wasn't good at dealing with interviews, not the way Dick was. He had a reputation as the surly one long before anything went down. But as long as he gave the right answers and got his ass to bus call, nobody cared what he did when the cameras were off, so he spent almost every night of that summer fucked up. Every night after the stages start to shut down, the party spills from the craft services tent out through the maze of buses, with bands setting up lawn chairs and grills out front, coolers of beer everywhere, constant prank wars and all-around shenanigans. Summer camp. But summer camp for wannabe rock stars. Roy gives them an excuse not to hang out with all the other bands. Sobriety is a good fucking excuse as they go. And the bonus of being independent is that they don't need to do any sort of press they don't want to do. Jason's been pointedly staying away from the news racks, in fact. Bruce has undoubtedly been feeding the media some ready-made bullshit narrative about his departure. Bruce was always so goddamn good at dealing with the press. When they do have free time, now, Jason writes. He hasn't been writing like this in a long goddamn time. He fills half a notebook in that first week. It feels good knowing that he can write without worrying about what Bruce and Dick will think. Knowing that when his lyrics do become songs, they'll be his songs, for him to sing in his own voice, rough and raspy as it is. It always felt strange hearing his words come out of Dick's mouth. Dick's voice is as perfect as the rest of him, and Jason understood why he was the singer, but it feels good knowing that this is his. The Outlaws mostly avoid everybody else for the first week. Keep their heads down, play their set, pack up, hit the road. Mind their own goddamn business. Jason thinks he's not happy exactly. He's not sure he knows what real, uncomplicated happiness would feel like. But he's finding his way in that direction for the first time in a long time. On the sixth day, a familiar voice greets them as they come off stage. "Hey, nice set." Jason turns around to find none other than Tony Stark fist-bumping Roy. He knows Tony, of course, in the same way that the entire country knows Tony, from Page Six items in TMZ footage, and they've been in the same place before. Stark Records is Bruce's biggest competition. But the feud between Bruce and Howard is legendary, and so Jason and Tony have never actually spoken. But Roy beams and thumps Tony on the shoulder a few times in a sort of contact-free bro hug. "Holy shit, man, hey! I was wondering when I'd run into you." "Meant to come the last couple of days. Sorry, we had signings," Tony says. He turns to Corey, who's hanging back warily. "I don't think we've been introduced, but Tony Stark, big fan. Really enjoyed the way you threw that drink in my dad's face." Shit, Jason forgot that happened, but it's true. It was all over the tabloids. Corey smiles, though, as Tony holds out his hand for her to shake. "Well done there. That was like a whole week where he was more pissed at you than me, so thanks for that. Then he turns to Jason, who bristles and ignores the hand. You watched our set? Why? Be nice, Jay. He's an old friend, Roy laughs, which only makes Jason bristle harder. From rehab. Oh, Jason says awkwardly. It's been a while, huh? Roy asks Tony. Yeah, you know, a few years and, oh, a million lifetimes ago, Stark says, and his tone is breezy, but his face doesn't quite match it. You, cleaned up these days? Jason's hands curl into fists at his sides. He watches Roy's face closely, waiting for any sign that Stark's prying is pissing him off. Roy just nods, tucking his sweaty hair behind his ears, and says, Yeah, you? Yeah, Stark says, relaxing a fraction, and Jason abruptly feels like an ass. Trying to make it stick this time, Roy says quietly, with a glance at Jason and Corey in turn. Jason gives him a smile, which Roy returns, tiny and genuine, green eyes crinkling at the corners. Jason's been repressing his crush on Roy for so long that it's second nature by now, and he's used to repressing the jealousy that goes along with it, too. Girls, and a few boys, keep throwing themselves at Roy. That's nothing new, of course. It's what everyone does when they meet Roy. Something about the long-lashed eyes, and the disarmingly adorable dimple in his cheek, and the way he looks at you like you're the only person in the world. The anything-goes, devil-may-care attitude, or the bad boy reputation, or maybe the freckles, or the long, thick hair. Jason gets it. Jason's been noticing those things, to his dismay, ever since he met Roy, back when he was Dick's friend. The weird part is that Roy isn't taking the bait lately. Jason lights a cigarette and scowls across the parking lot, watching a devastatingly hot metal chick bat her lashes at Roy. Jason's just waiting for Roy to give him a little wave and a wink and disappear somewhere with her for a while. But no. Roy shrugs her off with a crooked little grin, tugging his hands in his pockets, and jogs over to him. What's up with you? Jason asks, blunter and grouchier than he probably should have. What you mean? Roy asks. He snags the cigarette out of Jason's fingers and takes a long drag. Jason sighs and pulls out a new one. I mean, if I didn't know better, I'd say they gave you a chastity belt along with your fucking sobriety chip thing, Jason grumbles. Who says they didn't? Roy says, with one of his dumb, raspy giggles. Harper, I see your dick almost as much as I see my own, Jason sighs. If somebody locked it up, I would know. You're welcome. Would it kill you to wear underwear every so often? That'd just be another item of clothing I wouldn't be able to wash often enough, Roy says reasonably. Anyway, what's your point? You've been fucking everything with a pulse ever since you figured out what your dick was for. Jason realizes belatedly that he's being an asshole. No offense. You're an asshole, Roy says, without taking any offense whatsoever. This is why they're friends, Jason thinks. Yeah, I guess I kinda just did that, you know? Did what, everybody? I mean, Roy shrugs eloquently. Kinda. What about you? What about me? Jason says, startled. Without the big bad Brucey breathing down your neck, you could, like, hook up with whoever you want, Roy says. Jason doesn't know what to make of the way he won't quite make eye contact. Jason makes goldfish faces for a second. Is it weird if I say it didn't really occur to me? Roy gives him a crooked smile. Weird isn't the word I'd use. I'm not really a casual person, Jason admits, very quietly, scuffing his feet as he walks. It's not all it's cracked up to be anyway. Roy swerves closer as they walk, nudging Jason with his elbow. You do you. They walk in comfortable silence for a while, and then Roy says, I guess I just don't really feel like I need to right now. I've got people who matter. Rather spend time with them. Jason swallows around the lump in his throat and punches Roy hard on the upper arm, right on his shitty faded tattoo. Who are you and what have you done with Roy Harper, you fucking sap? Oh, I wasn't talking about you. I meant Tony Stark. Fucker. Not so much lately, no. Jason was pretty dead set on disliking Tony Stark and his easy charm and his casual way of slinging an arm around Roy's shoulders. he's a little bit shocked by how well they all get along with the rest of Tony's band, the Avengers. Corey joins forces with their bassist, Natasha, and their manager, Pepper, and the three of them walk around like a ginger Cerberus of feminism and hypercompetence. Jason finds a fellow lit nerd in their guitarist, Bucky, but also a fellow social justice warrior in their singer, Steve. Talking to Steve gets him fired up about a whole lot of things he somehow forgot in his bizarre warp speed journey from the Gotham streets to the VMA's stage. And Roy has a fast, comfortable friendship with Tony, but also with their drummer, Clint, who shares his phenomenally immature sense of humor and general laid-back approach to the world. It's more than that, though. It's nice to have another group they can party with, and by party, Jason means drink soda and have epic water balloon fights instead of actually partying. The whole band is sober for the summer in support of Tony and Clint, the same way Jason and Corey are supporting Roy. And sure, neither of them ever hit the sort of low that Roy did, but it's pretty damn obvious that it helps Roy to know that he has people he can talk to. There's an immediate camaraderie there. And if Jason's being honest with himself, there's also the appeal of how openly queer the Avengers are. Steve delivers painfully earnest speeches every night on stage about self-acceptance and pride, the sort of speeches that mean he has to watch his back in the Bible Belt. One night in Georgia, after being aggressively booed, Steve reels Tony in for a kiss, aiming a middle finger at the crowd the entire time. It's Clint and Bucky who really make Jason reconsider his stance on staying in the closet. They're together, and they don't make a big deal out of it, don't shout about it the way Steve shouts about everything, but they're always holding hands, always in tune with each other, shooting each other these fond, private smiles. Jason's not sure he's ever seen a gay couple who were that stable and happy together, and it makes him ache with jealousy. Makes him unpack some things he'd had boxed away for a long damn time, for one reason or another. Makes him wonder if that could be him someday. They're invited to Clint's birthday party in the Avengers' motel suite the next time they have a night off. They play music and eat cheap supermarket sheet cake, and for some reason, they end up showing off their dance moves, from Clint doing a backflip off one of the beds, "Don't get any ideas," Corey tells Roy sternly, to Natasha demonstrating an arabesque. And while they were all informed that there were no presents allowed, Steve brings out a package wrapped in newspaper late in the night. "I have something for you," he says. "Happy birthday." "Seriously?" Clint asks, startled. "But you didn't have to do that." "Well, if you don't want to think of it as a birthday present, then think of it as, I don't know, something I thought you should have." Clint unfolds it. It's a denim vest, spiked on the shoulders like the one Steve always wears, except this one has been dyed a smoky grayish purple color, and doesn't have any patches yet. "Thank you," Clint says. "Jesus, shit, thank you, seriously." He shrugs it on and runs a hand over the spikes with a grin, eyes suspiciously shiny. I guess I gotta figure out what else to put on here now." "There's a pin in the pocket," Steve says quietly. "You know, to get started, if you want it." It's the Bi Pride flag, pink and purple and blue stripes, and Clint stares at it for a long moment before pinning it carefully to the front of the vest, beaming. "The rest you can figure out as you go along," Steve says. "That's the fun part." Jason swallows hard. "Gonna get some air," he mumbles, to whoever is paying attention, and slips away. He starts wandering closer to the courtyard at the back of the motel. It's one of those cheesy, cheap ones that line the middle parts of the country. He doesn't actually remember what state they're in, but it's a flat one, rural. The stars are brighter here, even on the outskirts of some sprawling city, than they ever were in Gotham. That might have been a matter of smog, though, and not light pollution. Half the motel is taken up by Warped Tour bands, he's pretty sure, but most have gone out drinking and dancing, and it's not late enough for them to start coming back yet, so the courtyard is quiet. There's a chain-link fence around the swimming pool with a sign that reads, "Pool closes at dusk," and Jason hops it quickly and toes off his Vans, sitting down to dangle his feet in the cool water. The neon glow of the vacancy sign glints red off the barely there ripples. He knows Roy's footsteps by now, and it doesn't surprise him when he hears, "Jaybird, you good?" "I'm fine," Jason says gruffly. Roy hops the fence, and Jason hears the scuff of his shoes as he stumbles on the landing. Then he hears a soft flump of cloth hitting concrete, followed by the clink of Roy's belt. "Seriously?" Jason asks. He lights a cigarette, takes a deep drag, as if the nicotine could do shit about the way his hands are shaking. "It's the little things in life," Roy replies cheerfully, and slides into the deep end, barely making a splash. He lets out a happy sigh, treading water, before dunking his head, coming up sputtering. "I want to come out," Jason says, quiet and steady. "Oh," Roy says, "like, make a statement and shit." It's even, pensive, not a bit of judgment or worry in it. Not that Jason ever expects that from Roy. "Yeah," Jason says, clearing his throat. "A big fucking statement." Roy's smile is crooked and fond. "You sure?" "Absolutely not," Jason blurts out, with a shaky laugh. "Shit, no, I'm not sure at all." He swipes a hand over his face and is startled to find tears on his cheeks. "Okay," Roy says, with an easy shrug. "Hey, you should get your pants off." Jason inhales wrong and chokes on nothing. What? "Well, I know you've got your wallet in your pocket, and you wouldn't want that to get wet." "What? You can jump in here, or I can pull you in. Your call." Roy swims closer with a mischievous grin, reaching out to curl long fingers around Jason's bare ankle. Jason carefully ignores the freckles on his shoulders, the way the water droplets intermingle with them and shine pink in the faint neon glow. Wet locks of hair cling to his cheeks, his neck, the ends floating cloud-like around his shoulders. "Yeah, okay, fuck it," Jason says. "Hey, Jay. Either way, I've got your back. You know that, right?" Jason exhales like he was punched in the gut and nods. "Yeah, I know." If there's anything he can be sure of, it's that Roy will have his back. The end. And that's a story that I'm sticking to like a stony-faced accomplice. But tonight I need to hear some truth. Am I never getting through this? Yeah, you once sent me a letter that said if you're lost at sea, close your eyes and catch a time, my dear, and only think of me. Well, darling, I'm sorry.